available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions.
Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. Again, my co-host David Woods tries to throw me off in the intro, and he did a really good job the first time. I was sort of doing some behind the scenes work because I have to produce the show and, you know, put it all up and everything. So I try to do that while David's talking sometimes. And he completely threw me off with his cadence. And I think it was, I won't give you the secret, David, but I think it was the way you ended it. Because the last thing you say is what? From the 24/7 Sports Network. But yeah. You didn't make it sound like it ended. So my brain didn't go, he's over. And then it kind of threw me off. And it was pretty funny.
I nailed it better the first time. The second, what I was going for was like almost, it was like a combination of Siri plus like old movie phone talk, like where it's clearly like a recorded message where they're just plugging in words that they've said and it's like recorded. But I didn't quite nail it as hard the second time. But I do want to note for all the listeners, the reason why we had to restart is because Ryan then began his spiel saying, I am David Woods.
Yeah. No, it was really good. And because I really was thrown out, I was trying to finish writing that first paragraph in the when we upload the show. And he just ended before I realized. And then it was threw me way off. But anyway, that's how the sausage is made. But David, that was a good job. So I'm usually pretty good at not falling for his little trickeries, but I fell for it today when I was trying to multitask, which I thought about before. I'm like, don't multitask. He's going to do something, and then I have to make sure. But I was multitasking.
Well, you primed the pump again, so I'm coming at you.
Yeah, last week we had some little political-ish discussions. We were talking about some stuff that we're actually going to talk about on the show today. So we'll see if the pump continues to be primed. But there's some newsy stuff going on. In the Pac-12, I completely went away. I was off the grid this weekend. I was camping Catalina, no service whatsoever. So, of course, the Pac-12 releases its football schedule for everybody on Friday. Kind of we knew that was going to happen. I didn't get that until I came off the boat last night. And also, there's a Pac-12 players movement that's going on. You might have heard about the We Are United movement, so we'll talk about that. There's a potential to boycott the season, sit out the season. Several players from across the 12 universities had signed this movement, and they're, you know, tweeting about it and Instagramming about it. So we'll talk about all that stuff. And if you have any questions for the show, you can email us, pac12podcast@gmail.com. I think we got like 9 or 10 questions this week. One text message, you can send one at 424-532-0678 or even leave us a voicemail. Tweet us at pac12podcast, the website, pac12podcast.com. Reddit, Podcast of Champions, if you want to have a discussion there. And then on Apple Podcasts, please subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. We love that. That really helps out. Even if you don't like the show, we had some people tweeting about they didn't like the show. Hey, still leave us 5 stars, but then say why you think we suck. We love that.
Who tweeted at us that they didn't like the show?
Let me see. It was a thread. So Paul Angel tweeted, what especially depressing sports podcast should I listen to today? And our good friend, Lobo Jangles, all caught up with Downer David Woods at Pac-12 Podcast. And then Paul says, God, that one is bad. And then Lobo Jangles, who we thought was our friend, has a Kobe gif that's just like, yes, with a kind of weird smile on his face.
I just liked his tweet.
Okay. So... But to our friend Paul Angel, or maybe it's at, you know.
I don't think he's a friend. I think he might be a friend of yours, but definitely not of mine.
Potential friend. Hey, tell us that. Leave that exact same thing on Apple Podcasts, but with 5 stars, and we'll love it. We'll read it on the air. We'll give you more pub.
That's all we ask. I mean, we did just give him some free pub. We didn't even get anything from him, and we still gave him a read of his negative tweet.
Those Washington fans love the free pub. Whenever we mention one of them, like they always tweet so like much. free pub. I'm like, I don't know. It's not, is this really pub for us talking about you? I guess.
We do have a new review.
Oh,
this is perfect. It actually speaks exactly to what we're talking about. It's from SYB7. Sorry. 5 stars. Why do I do this to myself? I've been listening for years. I keep waiting for it to be enjoyable. I don't know if it will ever happen. Beautiful. Honestly, perfect review. Because no joke in there. Absolutely not. I think he's being dead serious in his description of our podcast, and I respect that. But he followed directions. 5 stars, baby. That's all we ask.
He did a good job, and we would read it. We'd appreciate it, and we do appreciate it.
All we care about is the number.
Well, so that's all the only review we got. I guess we need to just start getting into the breaking news that we have a schedule, and the Pac-12 actually came out with it first, Mr. Woods. The first schedule. We haven't heard. I think the Big Ten is going to come out with theirs later today. We're taping this on Monday or tomorrow or something.
We're not really taping it exactly.
We're not taping it?
I mean, have people really taped a podcast ever? It's more of a recording, I would think.
There are several of our older listeners on the USC site that they request cassette tapes of our show, so we provide those. That's happened. We love the people that are like, could you transcribe the podcast? I'm like, sure, an hour and a half worth of conversation with a bunch of slides. Like, yeah, that
all
makes
the ums and uhs and
Yeah.
So
that,
good.
That makes a ton of sense. We're gonna
have you ever
that.
Been transcribed perfectly? Like, have you ever read yourself talking, but they've transcribed you perfectly?
No, like, how bad it is?
It's the worst thing somebody can do to you. It's worse than death, is reading. Honestly, it's worse than listening to yourself, is reading just the stupid, horrendous things that come out of your mouth and the way it comes out. It's
they
awful.
Were ferocious.
Yeah, exactly. Awful experience. Do not recommend. 0 out of 10.
I don't think I've done that, but yes, there's certainly words that you can just glance over if you're listening that your brain just tunes out the ums and the likes and the so's, and you might say those a little too often, but if you're reading them, it's hard to skip over them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the Pac-12 schedule is out. If you don't know, August 17th is the first day that Pac-12 programs can start fall camp. You don't have to start then, but it'll give you about 6 weeks until the start of the college football season, which will be September 26th for the Pac-12. Today is August 3rd, so actually is the 20-hour work week for the athletes, so they can do more, you know, group activities on their campuses, so they can do the 20 hours of like instruction and weight training and all that kind of stuff. Unfortunately for the California schools, that's not a possibility yet. So there's some interesting things going on with the schedule. USC and UCLA play the very first week of the season. There's built-in bye weeks. There's a bye week so you can reschedule games. Also, there's sort of like an end of the season week 12 or whatever, where that's December 12th, where if you had to cancel a game early on, you could, you know, reschedule either during the bye week or after the season, and then the Pac-12 championship game would be either December 18th or 19th. So there's some flexibility there. It will not be held in Las Vegas. It'll be, you know, a home game for, you know, the top ranked team, just because they don't want to, you know, do more travel and all that kind of stuff. So that's sort of the gist of what's going on with the schedule. But there are some issues with the California schools, and a lot of people feel like USC and UCLA was scheduled that first week, but they probably won't play it till the last week, because USC, UCLA, and California right now, they're not even allowed to touch footballs or gather in large groups. So they're not doing the 20-hour stuff. They're working out outside. You can't lift a weight indoors there now. Stanford's a little different for the four California schools. They can gather in large enough groups because of the county they're in, Santa Clara. I think Cal, the city of Berkeley, and then USC and UCLA, LA County, are the ones that be a little more restrictive. But for Santa Clara, you can get larger groups, so they can do, I believe, position kind of group stuff and practice. And they also could touch a football, where USC, UCLA, and Cal are not allowed to touch a football right now. Stanford can, but watch this, David. Only two players can touch the ball. So you can't have a center to quarterback exchange and then hand it off or throw it. You can't do a flea flicker. It has to be the quarterback starts with the ball, hands it off, or throws it. Now, maybe if there's a tip pass, you're not allowed to touch it, I think, at that point, or like the, you know, the doctors will come down on you. But that's the kind of weird crap we're dealing with in the state of California right now. And I'm sure the rest of the Pac-12 is looking at us just shaking their heads.
I don't hate the, like, not being able to, like, have training camp in a state with, you know, widespread outbreak. That's fine. But who the hell came up with that rule about how many people can touch a football?
Yeah.
Like, where did, like...
The only thing I could think of, and I don't know this. From? This is probably readily available. I got off the boat from Catalina last night. I've tried to read as much as I can. My only thought would be that they were allowing, like, where I live in Hermosa Beach, like, we're not allowed to play volleyball because, you know, people touch the ball. They said you could play singles volleyball, which isn't a thing. But I believe it's probably something like, okay, you can play tennis, you and somebody else. So the two of you touching the same ball.
But
you couldn't play doubles. Like, you couldn't play where there's three of you touching the ball. So they'd say, okay, only two people can touch a ball. I don't know if it was specific for football, but if they two people can touch a ball, that means only the quarterback and then whoever they give the ball or throw the ball to can touch it. That's my guess.
But are they using a single ball for the quarterback and one guy, and then they exchange the, like?
You probably have to clean it.
How is any of this working?
Yeah, you probably have to clean the ball. Like, they're, I don't even know.
Playing, so they're the just specifics, playing catch.
What are the specifics going to be? Where if you're going to use a tackling sled, you know, where like, oh, okay, this is easier. You're pushing a tackling sled or whatever. Does it have to be sanitized like after each use? Like, we don't know what the politicians in the state of California at the different levels are going to say specifically about football.
Well, this would be Santa Clara County, right? Because they're the ones who are even allowing the fact that Stanford is having practice.
Right. But eventually we're assuming, otherwise there's not going to be a season, that LA County and Berkeley will start allowing things. But are they going to
one of us is assuming things.
Right. Well, is Berkeley going to say, you can touch a football, but you're not allowed to do like tackling sleds, or you can only have groups of five? Like, who knows how specific each of these, you know, levels of government are going to get and how limiting they're going to be. But I think this is part of the reason why we thought that season would start September 19th. They moved it back a week.
One of us thought the season would start.
Well, what they were going to announce. I'm not saying it's going to start like this. I'm very concerned that California has some issues here, you know, and they might not be able to go. And the only way you could do it, I think John Canzano was the one that reported this, or I can't remember exactly, my apologies if I got it wrong, but that the California schools could potentially have to go out of state to hold any kind of training camp. Because you get 25 practices per the NCAA, and August 17th to September 26th, what's like 6 weeks or so, that you have the opportunity to do that. So USC, UCLA, Cal, and Stanford, maybe they don't start training camp until September 1st, right? Who knows? You know, they might do something like that, but it's just going to depend on what they're allowed to do. Because right now, they're not allowed, they wouldn't be allowed to hold camp as of today. Is that going to change in 2 weeks? I don't know.
I doubt it. But yeah, I think California is going to be probably a stick in the mud, as it were, for whether any of this stuff starts going. And UCLA and USC proactively released that statement basically saying, yeah, there's a really good chance we're not starting on September 26th, I think was the general gist there, and we're in alignment. And it allows for that opportunity in December if they have to move the game. But I mean, I think there's going to be issues throughout. If you saw today, I think it was Northwestern today, one of the many, I think, Big Ten schools that has had to basically suspend operations for a while because of a positive case. I don't know if you saw Wilner's tweet from earlier today, but he tweeted out that if he was putting money on which conference was going to cancel first, it would probably be the Big Ten. That they're probably closer than anybody really realizes to just calling it.
Wow.
Because they have a little bit more financial they're on more financially stable ground than the Pac-12, I think would be the main reason, because I think California makes it so that the reality is the Pac-12 is probably least likely to have a season, but I think the financial stability of the Big Ten makes it more likely that they can call it without too many repercussions. But this is a something. So if one of the conferences goes down and says they're canceling the season, which I think is probably going to happen here at some point relatively soon, how quickly do all of them follow suit? And do you think that any of them will still try to play?
Yeah, that's tough. Like I think the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12 were sort of like trying to figure something out. And now it looks like the SEC came out with, they said they're doing a conference only schedule, right? So they're doing that. They're going to start the same time as the Pac-12. So they've kind of fallen in step there. The ACC still, I think they're trying to start like early September. And the Big 12 like had games moved up. So I'm not sure, like there's some weird stuff going on. I do feel, I think the Big 10 was first. They came out and said the Pac, you know, conference only schedule. I don't know. I mean, it would have to be pretty bad, I think, for them to just cancel the season, right now. I feel like it is smart to either say you're going with it and try to make it work, or postpone it till the spring, if you know, to see if that's even possible. But my theory, I wanted to run this by you. I feel like it's going to be, if you cancel the season, it's going to be camp time, not like you've played two games and it isn't working, like people are getting sick. I feel like if you're going to get, if there's going to be a spread, it's going to be spread among your own team. And when you do have the groups, when you do practice, I feel like that's where the spread is going to come from. And I know baseball is very different, but I was encouraged by what happened with the Phillies and the Marlins. I don't know if we talked about that last week, but with the Marlins, half the team got it, you know, and a couple of like staffers from the Phillies ended up getting it, people that were around the Marlins quite a bit. But for the players on the field, there wasn't any transmission there. And yeah. I know football's more, you know, physical, but you're still only, you know, in close proximity to these players briefly. If they have good mass, I mean, who knows? Maybe that'll help. But that was encouraging to me that, like, if you're playing a contest for 60 minutes, and football's only that, you know, you're really, that's only 60 minutes of time. Is that enough viral load? You know, you spit in someone's face or something, sure, but I think there might be some opportunities where it's not necessarily going to be, you got to worry about USC and UCLA playing each other as much as USC's got to practice with themselves all the time and be all in the same room. And you're in the dugout for baseball. I feel, to me, there's a long winded theory. If they cancel the season, it's going to be because camp doesn't work. Like you got to play football in camp, but among your team and among the same people all the time. If that works, I think you can have a season, but I don't see camp working and then the game's not working, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I for all the reasons I've said before, I'm not going to belabor them all again. I don't think it's going to have much to do with, like, I mean, I think transmission on the teams is certainly going to be a factor, but I think a lot of it's just going to be reality on the ground in the states we're talking about. And so many states now have just completely uncontrolled transmission that it's just hard to fathom creating other opportunities for, and I'm not talking about the games themselves, but what you were saying, within the teams, having uncontrolled spread on these teams that they then bring back to their classmates and their classmates' families and their coaches' families and the whole thing. It's another vector for transmission, and I can't imagine that getting approved, especially for unpaid labor. But I guess my question was more broadly. If by conference, they start deciding to cancel, which, you know, Willner more or less intimated the Big Ten might do it. But Pac-12, you know, if California doesn't decide to open things up here pretty quick, then the decision might be made for them. You know, if there's no fall camp starting by early September, then it might be just done deal at that point. But if that happens in the Big Ten, my thing, and this is something I'd love one of our resident lawyers who listens to this to weigh in, but I think there would be a ton of liability for other leagues if one of their peer leagues decides to close for COVID-related reasons, to then remain open, because then anybody who gets ill and has to be hospitalized, and I don't know if you saw, I think it was an Arizona wide receiver, the name's, I think, Jaden Mitchell, maybe, who tweeted today that he was, like, really, really sick and lost, yeah, like, 8% of his body mass doing this. So the canard that these guys, or that none of them, like, absolutely none of them are getting seriously ill is false. Like, there are some, and there was another guy who was offensive lineman at Big Ten school, I think, who his mom also posted something on Facebook about how he's been seriously ill and now has heart problems. And these are real things that are happening. And yeah, they're not common, but they're happening. These things, if they happen in the SEC, if the SEC decides not to close and the Big Ten and or the Pac-12 have, I would have to imagine that increases the SEC's liability, like their chance of getting a judgment against them if there was a lawsuit. And I have to imagine that's going to weigh on any decision maker's mind in any of these conferences. Is it's easier to go along with your peers if everybody's operating in lockstep. It's harder to make a decision to increase your liability. The Big Ten can opt out and say, well, we're making the safe decision. Anybody else then not making that decision is, I think, creating more risk for themselves financially.
No, I think that makes sense. And if the Big Ten is forced to, because there's just too many programs that can't even practice, and they're like, you know what, let's just wait until the spring or whatever, you know, delay this. I do think that makes it a lot easier for the Pac-12 or the SEC or whatever. Just like, you know what, we're going to call it off too. There's a lot of work being involved trying to make this work. And yeah, Jaden Mitchell did have a statement. He tweeted out, he had COVID for 3 weeks, had to quarantine for four, lost 14 pounds, and he's gaining it back and reconditioning himself. But he thanked the training staff at Arizona. He said it, you know, he felt safe and felt taken care of. He said, even though they did everything they could, being in a room or, you know, in a room or a house for 28 days had a great impact on my body and mental health. The fact is, the matter, if this virus gets a hold of you and you experience symptoms, it will have a great impact on you. So we know most kids won't have an impact, but if you do, like, then obviously it's going to be something like what Jaden experienced. He said, there's so many possibilities of sport where 100 plus people are in a locker room, 70 players travel, coaches, staff, trainers, and more. I don't see how that will work. We are physically touching each other every single snap. On top of that, we are getting paid $0, risking our health for people's entertainment. People have and will never step up foot on a field. I love the game more than life, and I am not opting out. But I do need players, coaches, fans, and everyone to realize the severity of not only the pandemic, but also the injustice. So he's, I mean, he makes some obviously good points there, and you feel for him, and hopefully he's fully recovered by now. But
yeah, absolutely.
It's, you know, it sucks. You know, he's right. It's that's why you have to, you know, if they're allowed to opt out, you're allowed to opt out. You can keep your scholarship, but that's great. Some players still want to play. They still want to take the risk. And that, you know, if there's going to be a season, then that's, you know, that's a choice that they can make. I just don't know. Like you said, are they going to even have that choice? As of right now, they do, but it could get, you know, if the Big Ten does cancel, it just makes it so much. It's so much easier. You know, you go to jump off one of those cliffs into a lake or something, or into the ocean. And I don't like to be the first guy to do it. I'll do it though, as soon as I see someone do it and he doesn't hit a rock and hurt himself. So I'd rather be the second person in. So I think there's probably a lot of conferences, commissioners, Dave, ready to be that second, you know, person in, where they didn't start it. They didn't ruin college football, but once the Big Ten decided not to, Larry Scott can go, like, you know what, that just makes sense. Let's just move on.
And it'll be the same thing as it was with the announcement of non-conference cancellations. Big Ten was first, and then Pac-12 soon there followed. I would imagine any scenario where the Big Ten decides to cancel will be a scenario where the Pac-12 more or less immediately follows suit.
Yeah. On the season itself, on the schedule, I saw someone tweet that Oregon gets a bye before the Washington game for like the third year in a row. So there was a Washington fan upset about that. I mean, USC is still playing the first week. There's some weird stuff. I thought there'd be two byes, but they really like a bye at the end of the season. So there's the flexibility built in we talked about before, which makes sense. But it starts a week later, and I think that's because of the California schools, and camp starts with some flexibility. Again, California schools. But was there anything else that kind of stood out to you? Like, you know, they just evened it all up. So everyone's going to play five home. Everyone's going to play five road. So it was pretty easy to figure out. You only miss two teams. You have to add the one that needs a home game or a road game. So it wasn't a lot of options there on who to add. But they've moved things around. USC plays like UCLA, Cal, and Stanford the first 3 weeks. So they play all the California schools in the first 3 weeks. But did anything else that you saw like kind of stand out to you?
The only thing that I noted was that it didn't look like any schools were traveling to California in the first week of the season. I think they were trying to avoid trips to California from other areas for a time. So that seems prudent. They seemed like they tried to go for proximity as much as possible with that first week. Not entirely, but somewhat. Otherwise, I mean, I didn't spend a whole lot of time breaking down matchups because, it just feels like a little bit of a waste of time. But, yeah, I mean, I think they did about as good a job as they could. And we'll see. I think for, maybe we can, if it's looking more optimistic in a couple of weeks, maybe we can go, and do our season previews, essentially, of how things, how we look at the schedules and what we think the records will be and all that kind of stuff. Whatever, it'll fill time. But I know for UCLA's purposes, one thing that struck me is just how gruesome it is for Chip Kelly that there's no non-conference schedule this year. Because looking at that one, just eyeballing the 10 games now that they've added Washington, that's 5-5 would be a lot. Like that would, it's going to take a lot to get to 5-5.
Yeah.
So that's one thing that stood out to me, but I wasn't. I don't think a lot of it's going to happen. Maybe they get a couple of weeks in. I just don't think there's going to be much to it. But if this is the form it takes in spring, that'll be interesting. I like this. I wouldn't, in the future, it'd be kind of cool to have, something more akin to a round robin. This isn't quite there, but, you get up to 11 games, it is. But it is nice that they're playing a little bit more of the Pac-12 this year.
Yeah, I like for the SEC, like they normally play 8 conference games. Now you're going to play 10. I think there's going to be a lot more churn, less, there's usually not as much churn there because the best teams don't always play each other where like they would in the Pac-12. So that'll be interesting to watch too. If you go undefeated in the SEC with a 10-game conference schedule, I think that's going to mean something. The bye weeks are mixed up between weeks 4, 5, and 6. So there's some options there. There's 4 teams with a bye week in week 4, week 5, and week 6. Arizona State, it's also another rivalry game that plays week 1. And Arizona State comes out, they play their rival Arizona, Stanford, and then Oregon. Like, that's a pretty, pretty interesting start to the season. Some other stuff, like Washington, Stanford play week 1. So that's, kind of a Pac-12 North, power situation. There's... You don't have some of the traditional like end of the season rivalries like, Oregon and Utah are playing at the end of the season. Well, that could be a preview of the championship game like it was, 2 years ago. So there's some interesting aspects to it. Yeah, Cal and UCLA end their season playing each other. So there's kind of a rivalry, rivalry element there. Washington State, they end the second to last week of the season. So there's something. It's just kind of reshuffling things and seeing where they line up. And I get it. They tried to do some stuff for the California schools to make it easier, but unless California backs off on some of these health restrictions or things get better here, it's going to be really hard for those teams to have camp. And then it's like, well, what do you do? I think Kyle Whittingham was already talking about, he had talked about a couple of times, like moving forward, even if every team can't play. So there's definitely programs that are ready to do that. I don't know what Larry Scott and the Pac-12 would do, or if they try to find some contingency to allow the California schools to.
Yeah, there's no way that's happening.
You don't think you're gonna fly like 150 people to another state to try to practice would work for like 4 weeks? You're so pessimistic.
I'm such a pessimist. I don't think that'll work. I want to be clear. I think California, like, look, some of the regulations are a little bit wonky. Like, three people can probably touch a football. That's probably fine. Whatever. That's cool. But it's not California's regulations that are the problem. I mean, if the pandemic is ongoing, you're going to end up with the same crap that's happening to all these other schools. The fact that it hasn't happened yet to a California school is probably a good thing. that they've had to completely shut down operations. But I mean, that's happening all over. California is being pretty stringent, but it's because there's an ongoing, absolutely heinous public health crisis with like 10,000 cases a day still. So their regulations are what is directly inhibiting the start of camp, but it's not what is inhibiting the function of a season. It's the ongoing public health crisis that is unrelated to what a state government is restricting right now. If anything, that's helping the situation. The only way a season happens is if we're in a much better situation from a public health standpoint than we are right now. We're not there yet. If more states were doing what California is doing right now, maybe we'd get there. Yeah. But that's, that's really just kind of like the broad angle thing. I mean, obviously their restrictions are what is, preventing these schools from having fall camp right now, but it's not what's going to ultimately prevent a season.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's about all on the schedule stuff. We also have
so much to talk about.
We do. Hashtag We Are United. This happened while I was gone. I think ESPN had something on Saturday that this was going to come out. And then was it the Players Tribune that they posted this? It was 11 players from 9 different Pac-12 programs signed it. And there's different, demands about racial equality and player safety, economic freedom. So some interesting stuff. And I think there's some really good, suggestions and demands in there. My just general feeling was, though, it's hashtag We Are United that doesn't really make sense, because you couldn't even get a player from every school to sign, one player from every school to sign. It's like, to me, that's a little premature. Like, if I want to come out with something like this, I want to make sure that the majority of the players are on board. But I think that would mean that the players have to have their input into what's going on. And this was sort of like, this was come up, but a smaller amount of people, and then you kind of push it out there to the rest of the people. And for the most part, there's a lot of, Pac-12 players on social media that were supporting this, but there was a bunch that came out too that were like, hey, I love a lot of this stuff, but I got to play. So it just doesn't seem like it's, fully on We Are United. I love a lot of the stuff that's in there, but it's just, I don't know. It just felt a little weird for me there. Is that unfair, or what do you think?
I don't think it's unfair. I think there is, I think it's unclear, how many people are behind this, how many people are willing to be openly behind it, how many are willing to put their job, their unpaid labor on the line for this. And I think that's unclear. I don't think it's just the 11 people in this, but I don't know if it's 100 people. It's hard to know at this point, because we only have the names of, I think it was 13 actually, or 13 who eventually said they've signed on to this or whatever. But we just don't know at this point. How many are actually going to abide by the essentially implicit threat here. But I think the demands themselves, full stop, I support basically everything they asked for. I think there's some that are more workable than others. The financial thing is the thing that everyone is hanging up on. And I don't know, I could go back and forth on it. If you're starting a negotiation, it's great to start with a big ask, but also asking for the 50% rev share at this point might get you not laughed out of the room, but it is, I think, I don't know if it's turning over any people who would have been on your side to the other side, but it does make it a little bit harder for even some of these players to sign on with it.
Yeah.
Because in context of what's going on right now, I do think a crisis is a great time to ask for that sort of stuff, because it's just, that's a great time to exercise some leverage, because they desperately need a season to prop up all these athletic departments. And if the players decide to opt out, they won't have a season. I think there's some other stuff in here that's so necessary that it's unfortunate to maybe get too hung up on other stuff. I could go back and forth on it. There's just a lot of stuff here, but let's Maybe let's go through point by point to see what we agree and disagree with.
Sure. Okay. Do you got the points up? Or?
Basically, yeah, I've got it pulled up. So the first one is health and safety precautions, and I don't really have any issue with any of these. The COVID-19 projections basically allow option not to play during the pandemic without losing athletics eligibility or spot on your team's roster. That seems – I think most schools have already done that.
Yeah, I think that exists already, so that's good.
Yeah. Two, prohibit or void COVID-19 agreements that waive liability. I don't know if this is a thing in the Pac-12, but I know in Georgia they've done a lot to try to limit liability for anybody who's forcing employees or unpaid labor back to work during COVID, and they're asking to waive that for athletics. I think that's reasonable and fair.
Sure, yeah.
Mandatory safety standards, including COVID-19 measures, player-approved health and safety standards enforced by a third party selected by players to address COVID-19 as well as serious injury, abuse, and death.
Okay.
Seems right.
Yeah, I mean, there's no... You know, you want some oversight. You don't want the well, our, you know, I guess when the SEC was coming back, they didn't even want to test people unless they were had symptoms. And it's like, no, we need that. You had some advocate for you to say,
yeah, you don't want
to be tested this much and all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want it to be Doc Crossbones who like injects you with cortisone every time you complain about knee pain. So, yeah, right. I'm all for that. All right. And then protect all sports. So this one was interesting. One, preserve all existing sports by eliminating excessive expenditures. One, Larry Scott administrators and coaches to voluntarily and drastically reduce excessive pay.
So, yeah, I mean,
I love that. I think it should happen. I think it should happen across the board of college athletics. Is that one realistic at this point? I don't know. I really doubt it. I think UCLA and Cal still haven't even taken their reductions in pay, because they're still awaiting guidance from the University of California on how to do so. So I don't know. But I love the ask, and I support that.
Yeah.
I think everyone's getting paid too damn much money in the sport, except for the people who are actually participating in it. But yeah, that's fine.
It's funny, like the thing with like Larry Scott, he shouldn't be making $5 million a year. I get that. Like there's no, if you reduced Larry Scott's salary to $1 million, it's not like the Big Ten would go, ooh, we can get him, we can hire Larry Scott away.
No one's coming after Larry Scott for $400,000.
Right. So you could cut his salary. The problem is, like, if you cut Nick Rolovich or,
yeah, it's arms race stuff.
Yeah, like, then someone's going to hire him away. Yeah.
Well, you need, I mean, this is where it becomes, it needs to be more collective than the Pac-12. And I'm not sure that wasn't the point of this.
Right.
To try to build, because... So from what I understand, there was like a group text with a bunch of like, it sounded like 400 Pac-12 players between, I think, a lot of different sports.
Some kind of group chat thing.
Yeah. It was like a group, whatever, like a WhatsApp thing. And they were talking about this whole thing. I wonder if publicizing something like this, even with, maybe they were hoping that it wouldn't, I don't know. Maybe they were hoping that it would kind of spark a little bit more, and maybe it still will. Of other leagues kind of jumping on board with the same idea, because the only way this works is if you kind of is the financial piece. The only way that works is if you get all the other leagues to operate in concert. And by all the other leagues, I mean the unpaid labor of all of the other leagues.
Right.
So that's the part where I think it becomes more difficult, because you're also, if you ask all of that of just a single league, you're basically relegating that league to second tier status, and at that point there wouldn't be any reason for the Pac-12 not to just go, okay, well, we're Ivy League now, we're done, we're out of the game, because they wouldn't be able to compete, because they wouldn't have the coaches and so on and so forth. So I think there needs to be some more collective work across all of the different leagues, and maybe this would have to happen at the legal level, because the NCAA operates like a cartel, but that'll be for later on down the road. Anyway, all right, so that one is, I generally agree, but it's that devil's in the details.
That's not going to happen before the season starts.
No, so, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen for a long time. Two, end performance academic bonuses. I don't hate this on a year basis, especially for this year, because it's so weird. Why would you have performance bonuses for a 10-game season?
True.
So
are they talking about like coaches, like bonuses, or what are these? I'm not.
Yeah, these are like the performance bonuses. Like if you win, I don't know, if you make it to a bowl game, you get $50,000. If you, win the conference, you get $100,000, that sort of deal.
I'm not sure what that does. I mean, it's the incentive based stuff. I think you'd rather have in the contract than just, hey,
I think
coach
might be. I think they might be thinking of it for this year with all of the weird budgetary issues.
Oh, okay.
Because they're saying eliminating excessive expenditures to preserve all sports. I think the impetus was basically what happened to Stanford and what's...
Oh, trying to say. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That's cool.
But I could be wrong. Maybe they mean that, in perpetuity. And that would be a hard sell for me because I think incentive-based, bonuses are fine in basically any contract. It's just if they get exorbitant, maybe you cap them. Three, end lavish facility expenditures and use some endowment funds to preserve all sports. As an example, Stanford University should reinstate all sports discontinued by tapping into their $27.7 billion endowment. Again, so the end lavish facility expenditures, you can make an argument that if you concede the arms race, you're relegating yourself to second tier status even more than you already are. And at that point, again, does the Pac-12 just say, screw it, we're not doing, major revenue sports anymore?
You'd have to go like Ivy League-ish kind of thing.
I don't know if you'd have to, but they could make that argument. And using endowment funds to preserve all sports. So endowment, there's a lot of rules about how you can draw on it and the whole deal. But yeah. I'm sure they could figure it. Stanford is one of the richest goddamn places in the world. They can figure out a way to save those like Olympic sports that cost like $10,000 to operate. They could do it. They don't want to. So I'm fine with this. Something that prevents these universities from closing those things, fine.
I don't know if you want to be specific about you have to pay for it this way. Just like, hey, while we're going through this, we have to like cut the budget to find a way to keep those sports. I could go with that. But there's all kinds of legal crap if you say it has to be an endowment. Like, I don't know. I don't know how that works.
This whole financial section in the Protect All Sports piece, it feels a little hand wavy to me. Like, yes, all this stuff sounds good. I kind of agree with it all, but it's all in the details and the guts of it. And you're asking for bigger things. You're asking for, and I don't think it's wrong, but you need to start working at the structure of college football. First, you would need some overarching organization that actually has control over the sport, which the NCAA doesn't really. And you would then need to operate through that entity. It wouldn't be through the individual conferences because they would, it's like a prisoner's dilemma. You can't do this thing because you don't know if the other conferences are going to follow the same, steps that you are.
Yeah.
All right. Then section three is end racial injustice in college sports and society. That seems like a big ask. One, form a permanent civic engagement task force made up of our leaders, experts of our choice, and university and conference administrators to address outstanding issues such as racial injustice in college sports and in society. Love task forces.
Yeah, you think it's effective? No issue there. I mean, it's.
I don't think task forces are effective, but whatever. They're no pain.
They could, make the average fan aware of issues that players face. And if you can shed light on some things, good idea. It's not like it's going to be
meaningless mumbo jumbo task force, whatever.
Okay.
Two, in partnership with the Pac-12, 2% of conference revenue would be directed by players to support financial aid for low income Black students, community initiatives and development programs for college athletes on each campus. I love this. They should.
Very cool.
And I think Wilner said the 2% would amount to about $10 million a year.
Right, which would that makes more sense. I think Wilner said he loves the idea so much he's pissed that he didn't come up with it himself. So
that's a good one.
I think we're in on that.
Yeah, and then three, form annual Pac-12 Black College Athlete Summit with guaranteed representation of at least 3 athletes of our choice from every school. Love that as well.
Cool.
Again, I don't know about task forces and summits. They never seem to do anything, but sure, what the hell? Why not?
I think you forgot the 6-year.
No. That's in section four, I think.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies. I thought that was in section one. Okay.
No. Section four, economic freedom and equity. So one is guaranteed medical expense coverage, medical insurance selected by players for sports related medical conditions, including COVID-19 illness, to cover 6 years after college athletics eligibility ends.
Love the crap out of it.
I love it.
Why not? Yeah.
Yeah, do that. And it's relatively cheap. And I saw somebody was coming up with this, and I wish I could attribute it properly, but you can probably find it on Twitter, where it should be now more or less standard for athletes to have guaranteed admission to a master's program as long as they graduate in good standing from your university to get into a master's program at your university. and have the medical insurance cover those years, as because they will anyway. I mean, I think through student insurance. And then you only have to do four more years after that, but you're also getting them a more valuable degree at that point because they don't have athletic obligations. They can finish their master's and actually pick something they want to get it in. Because the reality is, college football players specifically and college basketball players are getting like one of three degrees for the most part. It's like sociology, poli sci, or history, or whatever garbage majors you have at your university of choice. But it's never like, that's fine for some of them, but some of them might be interested in biology or whatever, and they can't really do that. But being able to stay for a master's or a post-bac or whatever it is and give them an opportunity to educate themselves in a subject that they can actually devote their time to rather than the, you know, 70 hours a week they're actually doing football stuff. We say it's 20. It's not. It's fake. That's bullshit. That huge amount of time that they have to devote to that, then that would be a good and equitable solution. And you're also already covering them with, you know, 2 years post-football with whatever student insurance you have. And then it's only four more years on top of that. It's also really cheap because they're young. And most of them are in really good shape.
Yeah.
So that's not even that expensive, I don't think, is basically my point there. Name, image, and likeness rights and representation. The freedom to secure representation, receive basic necessities from any third party, and earn money for our use of our name, image, and likeness rights. We're both strong advocates of that, I think, on this show.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that. And that would go a long way to resolving what's in number the next one. This is the one that I think is drawing the most consternation. Fair market pay, rights, and freedoms. One, distribute 50% of each sport's total conference revenue evenly among athletes in their respective sports.
Yeah.
That's a tough one.
That's tough.
That's a tough one. I love it in theory, but this one requires a restructuring of the entire. This goes back to you need to restructure the entire sport, not just FBS. I mean, not just Power Five, but every FBS league. I think you need to rewrite some federal laws to get this one done. Like there's some major stuff that would need to happen to make a 50% rev share happen on any of these campuses, where you're not also creating a lot more problems than you're. Now, I don't think you're creating a lot more problems than you're solving, but there might be cascading problems that you're not foreseeing. We don't know exactly how Title IX would be interpreted with this situation. A lot of legal experts or sports business people who probably have some interest in saying this, but sports business people say, yeah, there would be some issues. There are some lawyers who say, well, actually, Title IX's never been interpreted to affect pay. And if these were employees, they wouldn't really be under Title IX. I don't know. I'm not a legal expert. Somebody else can weigh in on that. But there is at least a possibility that it could be interpreted in a certain way that would make this hard to do unless you restructure the entire thing. And because all these athletic departments have been mismanaged to such an extent, there is a reality that if you tried to share 50% of revenue right now, there wouldn't be many of these athletic departments the next year. Just it can't happen. There's not enough money to go around. It's a big ask, and maybe some of this could be taken up through name, image, and likeness. Maybe the schools could even negotiate on behalf of the athletes or something. I don't know. But maybe there could be some element of this that's covered by some other form of compensation. But I don't just this is not realistic in any kind of reasonable time frame.
Right. I agree with you there. This is one of those things where I believe one of the players that signed it didn't even realize this was in there. So that's why. And I get you can make these, you know, big asks and. But you might turn people off, like David said. Wilner wrote, I copied this down from his column on this. He says, by all means, aim high with negotiations, but don't aim for an alternate universe. It puts the focus away from the reasonable and necessary improvements in health protections for these players. And I think that makes sense. There's just so many ways you can interpret. You could say Title IX would not allow it. That might not be true, but that's an argument you can easily make. You can make the argument that if you're going to only split, and I think it said you get to split the revenue for each sport. Well, football is the only one that makes money. So football players would get money, and then everyone else not only wouldn't get money, but since those programs cost money, you could argue they would have to get rid of those programs, which is something you said you couldn't do in one of the other ones. So yeah, I think there's ways you can get the players involved on the financial side, but this one just sort of missed the mark for me.
Yeah. And I don't think, I'm not sure it would work unless you did an even split across all sports, if you were trying to stay within the bounds of a Title IX. Now, I think the fact that these schools have operated so poorly from a budget standpoint certainly has to factor in here, and they need to do a better job. And there should be profit every year because it's a huge industry. I mean, the fact that they're trying to zero out their budgets is, you know, probably a crime. But all of this, it's just, I think they're, again, the ramifications of all of this stuff, maybe they're foreseeing them and they're just putting this out there to kind of drop a bomb and just say, look, we're going to ask for a lot. But there are ramifications of this that are really hard to wrap your mind around, and they require some, you know, essentially restructuring of the sport, which, again, I am all for. I'm just saying, realistically, I don't know that there's going to be any appetite for that, or if there's any even structures in place to restructure it. Like, you need a governing body that actually functions, and there isn't one. The NCAA sucks. Like, you need to replace that with something first, and then you petition that replacement to do this stuff. Now, if there's enough movement to strike, then things get weird in a hurry. Like, if there are enough players who say, screw it, no, we're not doing this, and we're not doing it in the spring either when you want us to do it, then things would get moving in a hurry. But I don't know if there's enough there. Hopefully there is. Hopefully they've got enough to actually bring some leverage here, because many of these asks are good ones that need to happen. And there is opposition to them from a lot of these universities and organizations because they do cost money. So hopefully they can get some of this done, and hopefully they don't have to resort to a full fledged, you know, strike to do it, but, you know, they might have to. All right. Anyway, two, 6-year athletic scholarships to foster undergraduate and graduate degree completion. So that might be where that guy who tweeted about it said that thing, but I like that.
That's cool. That adds value to your scholarship. If you know, not only can I go to school and get my degree, but it's going to open up things for a master's as well. And I mean, you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, worth of value for the athlete. You can argue that that doesn't cost the school any money, but it's still, if a regular student walks off the street and they had to pay $400,000 for a couple of degrees, that's a, you know, that's at least it's a nice benefit.
Yeah, and I love it. And also, not even just for graduate degree completion, but it'd be great to be able to get into a PhD program, like all that kind of stuff. The 6-year athletic scholarship at least gets you started there. So I like that. Three, elimination of all policies and practices restricting or deterring our freedom of speech, our ability to fully participate in charitable work, and our freedom to participate in campus activities outside of mandatory athletics participation. Yeah, totally. Sure. Great. So that's probably taking away people's phones for social media and among many other things. But that's one thing that immediately springs to mind from the past of these dictatorial coaches. Four, ability of players of all sports to transfer one time without punishment, and additionally in cases of abuse or serious negligence. I don't think this goes far enough, but fine.
And that almost, like, this is one of those things that almost passed this year. Without COVID, we probably have that.
Yeah, there's a lot of, like, so reasonable that I'm, like, way further along than these guys are. Like, I'm like, no, you should be able to get up and move anytime you want to and play the next game for another team. I don't give a crap. You should be able to do that. What the hell? If they're not going to pay you, just go and do whatever you want.
Yeah. But I think we're going to get that. Like, the NIL stuff, like, Congress is going, like, there's a lot of these things that are in process of happening, which is good, you know?
Yeah. Five, ability to complete eligibility after participating in a pro draft if player goes undrafted and forgoes professional participation within 7 days of the draft. Again, love it. Doesn't go far enough.
Yeah, I'm cool with that too. I don't got any.
You should be able to complete your eligibility up to and including, like, if the guy is in an NFL camp and didn't, you know, make the cut, the final cut, like, he should be able to go back and play for his college team. What the hell? Who do you care? Who cares? Let him go play, and then he can go back into the draft the next year and try to do better.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that, like, his amateur clock doesn't end until he's, like, a full-on member of the team getting paid, yeah, no, not like.
Well, and amateurism is a joke. Like, and that's the big thing. It's like we need to stop propping up amateurism as a real thing, and that again requires changes of things way beyond the NCAA. That requires like federal law changes. Yeah. And then six, due process rights. Yeah, we're all for those. So yeah, really, it's the financial stuff that gets wonky, and I think it's mostly wonky because of how we have structured the NCAA and propped it up for decades upon decades. It wouldn't be wonky if we were talking about any other sport where, you know, there's many hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue every year, because there's a bunch of sports like that and they all have more or less 50-50 cuts with the players. But we're talking about an organization that operates in this really funky way where they claim amateurism and all this other janky stuff. I mean, the other sports on campus should basically be club teams, and if the schools want to have them, great, whatever. But football and basketball, they bring in millions upon millions of dollars every year, and it's the only industry of its kind since about 1865 that's able to do that on the backs of unpaid labor.
I'm glad I read the Grant book, because we've had the like a lot of talks about 1865 since then. So
it's been great. It's been great.
All right. So that's the movement. We'll see, you know, what transpires from that, but it was kind of making a lot of news this weekend while I was gone. So I had to catch up and, catch up what's going on there unless you have anything else along the same lines. Have you heard about what's going on with, Washington State head coach Nick Rolovich and
his
wide receiver Cassidy Woods? No relation, I assume.
No, none. Do you remember when we were talking about Rolovich taking over for Mike Leach and we were like, yeah, it's the same like offense, same like kind of kooky guy, but not as maybe potentially problematic, not as maybe creating as many issues in the sphere. Remember when we were talking about that?
Yep.
Well, let's go back in time and wrest those words out of our mouths, because Rolovich stepped in at big time. So I listened to the audio before it got removed, which may or may not have been recorded illegally. I'm not clear on two-way consent laws. We're talking about a lot of legal issues here. Washington is a two-way consent state. Yes. So if that was taking place in the state of Washington in any way, that's no good. But I listened to the recorded audio for a few minutes before I apprised myself of the laws and realized I shouldn't have done that. And Rolovich, I think you could – so I did not listen to it charitably, and I think I'm reading it the correct way, which is that there was an implicit threat there from him, which, and in the transcript he basically says, okay, well, if you're opting out, and Cassidy Woods is basically, he said he was opting out because he's sickle cell, he has I don't know, a predisposition to sickle cell anemia or actual sickle cell anemia, I'm not sure which, but he said he was opting out for COVID health related reasons, and Rolovich said essentially, that's fine, I'm I don't care. That's totally cool. As I told you, I assume there was a meeting before that. And then he asked, but are you doing this We Are United thing? And Cassidy said, yep, I'm all for that too. And then Rolovich went on this long soliloquy about it where he basically said, well, that's going to be a different deal. It's going to change the sport and it's going to change how we deal with this. We meaning Washington State and himself. The implied thing was, it's totally fine if you're opting out because of COVID, and it's going to be an entirely different thing if you're opting out because of this We Are United thing, and we're going to deal with it differently. Now, you would have to be a very charitable reader to decide there's no implied threat there. And I think you could read it as he's mostly trying to be a mentory type figure to Cassidy Woods, and I think that's a... You know, I think you get 80% there, but you can't get the whole 100%. There is definitely an implied threat there that there's going to be different consequences for you if you're opting out for this reason than if you're opting out for COVID. That's not the way to talk about this issue. It's unfortunate that he probably didn't consent to the phone call or the phone call being recorded. Cassidy could have probably just transcribed it as he went and then said, hey, this is what he said to me. This is screwed up. Or recorded it himself, not publicized it, and then written up what he heard. But all that being said, I thought Rolovich looked bad. I don't think Woods looks awesome. But just mainly because you're recording a call like that, and publicizing the recording again, just take notes after you record it and then say, this is what he said. But Yeah, I thought Rolovich looked bad. I thought he shouldn't have said most of what he said. And yeah, it's dog crap. I thought Wilner had a good point, which is that all these coaches need to learn how to talk about these issues because they are becoming more prevalent.
Yes.
But yeah, that was crap.
It was, yeah, his response was terrible. I mean, the good thing is the player wants to, you know, opt out for health reasons, and that's completely allowed. They keep their scholarship. There's no issues. Obviously, he takes it to another level by saying, like, yeah, but if you're going to opt out because of this, new thing, the hashtag, you know, we are united movement, he makes it sound like, at least from the transcript I read, that that's not acceptable. And obviously, that's not the way you want to handle this. There was some, I think there were some tweets that were saying, Ty Jones, Wazoo already cutting players for standing up for what they believe in. Not really surprised, though. And then there were some reporters that were saying, you know, contrary to this, a source close to the team confirms that no Washington State football players have been cut. I've seen a bunch of reporters report that. So that's a good news. I mean, you would be shocked if they were cutting players because they wanted to be involved in this movement. It doesn't really make sense. But the controversy was that Woods wanted that he wanted to still work out with the team. And, you know, Rolovich is like, no, you don't want you around. And Wilner had a good point on that. Like, if you're saying you don't want to play because you're worried about health concerns, like, the most dangerous part is like being around your team, you know, and practicing. So you shouldn't be doing that if the reason you don't want to play the game is because of health concerns. You should be as far away from the team as possible, which I don't know if you disagree with that, but that makes sense to me. I don't think that was controversial.
And that part I thought was right. And that's where the part where, like, I thought Woods was coming off a little bit, you know, that's no, you can't be participating if you're using illness or potential illness, and you shouldn't be. If you're using that as the reason, then you shouldn't be a part of any team activities. That seems right and fair. The real misstep was, I think I tweeted about it, but it was between the 50-second mark and the 2-minute mark of the transcript, which is where he decided he was going to, you know, talk about this We Are United movement. But when he stuck to I thought the way he discussed the COVID thing, I mean, a little brusquely, basically, I don't give a shit if that's why you're, I mean, that's more or less what he said. I don't give a shit if that's why you're doing it. I'm totally cool with that. But the other piece, it just, you know, that's not how you're going to talk about those issues. And it's not how you're going to endear yourself to your team. I imagine he's going to have to release some sort of statement, right?
Yeah, I figure pretty soon there's going to be some just, kind
and
of.
I think it wasn't good at all. It looked like crap. I think it's something that he'll be able to explain away if he does it right. Whether it's sincere or not, I don't know. But I don't think it's going to be like a deal breaker for his entire career at Wazoo. It just looks bad. And look, a lot of these coaches are not like good at this, and for a lot of different reasons. But it looks bad. It's a bad misstep, complete crap. I mean, it's an obviously horrendous, you know, thing to intimate to a kid that because he wants to express his views about an obviously unjust system, that's going to somehow entail more consequences for him from you. I mean, that's horrendous. But I think it's something he'll be able to explain away. So if you're a Wazoo fan wondering if your coach is going to get fired for this, I really doubt it. But It did look like crap.
And I'm wondering, usually we've seen when a coach screws up during these last couple months, pretty quick turnarounds and apologies. And it's usually worked out pretty well. Players seem to have, you know, their coaches back or whatever when this happens. But in this case, I don't know for sure, but we might not have heard anything from Nick Rolovich because of the potential legal issues with the taping. And if he makes a comment that could have an impact on that, it could be a situation where Cassidy Woods was in the wrong and he wasn't supposed to tape that. But Rolovich is like, you know what? I shouldn't have said what I said here. Let's just, you know, I don't care that you taped it. I'm going to come out with an apology. There's no charges.
What they should do is exactly what Gundy and that, and Chuba Hubbard did, which is, I mean, Gundy didn't do it. What they should both do is, I mean, this is just me talking from a PR standpoint. I don't think anybody should be apologizing, really, except for Rolovich here. But because you were doing an illegal thing, Cassidy Woods, and Rolovich, you don't want to, like, file a lawsuit against one of your players. That's crazy. And also, you sounded like a horse's ass. So you both get on camera together. You say, hey, man, I'm sorry about this. Hey, I'm sorry about this. You shake hands or don't shake hands. Gesture at each other from across the room. Who gives a shit? But this would be a really easy thing to solve. Just let make it go away from that respect. And then move on to, you know, trying to make it up to your team.
Yeah. All right. One last quick note. Just our buddy John Canzano from the Oregonian. He was the first to report this, and I think people have followed suit. Woody Dixon, the general counsel and lead football administrator, leaving the Pac-12. So you remember him a couple of years ago and his botching of the officiating and all that stuff. Probably should have been gone then. Sort of just like you didn't hear from him for 2 years, and now he sort of like just walks away quietly. I think it's probably a good thing. I think Wilner wrote about this is a great opportunity for Larry Scott to make a great hire here. Someone with real football experience and not just someone that's playing the part. I don't have any quick thoughts on that, Dave.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I don't think he should have been around for the last 2 years. I mean, after what he did, like, you just need to be.
No. Yeah. I mean, he shouldn't have been. But I think it all starts with our man, Champagne Larry. So yeah, it's great. But
the truth is, we all know Champagne Larry likes to roll large, right?
Thank you. So this is good. Happy trails.
Yeah. That was John Canzano saying that too. So that's, it's nice we got the, get his definitive words on the subject. Did you see the? I forgot to write this one down. He also had a pretty damning piece about the LA Times and the Pac-12. Yeah.
That they were buying. That honestly looked. I think the main uptick for like sports talk Twitter was all about how it looked bad for the Pac-12. I thought it looked awful for the LA Times.
Oh, completely. Yeah, awful. I texted a buddy that works for the Times, and he's like, "Man, this is not a good look." And
they've had a bad run of press about them, which is not good. Like, I don't know if you followed the Arash Markazi thing, but he got some bad stuff, and then I think he eventually ended up suspended.
I didn't know if he was. Arash is a friend of mine. I haven't talked to him for quite a while, but yeah, that was a weird one too. I was like, man, this is not a
plagiarism accusations and some other stuff. And then the LA Times. So basically, the Pac-12 essentially negotiated some sort of advertising arrangement with the LA Times where they would funnel them money in exchange for getting a dedicated reporter to basically Pac-12 Olympic sports. And I don't know how far – it was unclear to me how far a lot of it got off the ground. But they
did started. Like that reporter came to a couple of USC practices.
Yeah, she was at UCLA practices, and she did a good job. Like, and I think that was one note in Canzano's story that I don't think got hammered hard enough. But she wasn't like – a nefarious actor. Like, she actually, I read a couple of her UCLA reports and they were good. But it's just the LA Times kind of failed as an institution by really blurring the line between what is your business side and what is your editorial side.
Right.
And it sounds like the sports editor at the time, Angel Rodriguez, did not do a very good job at all of managing that situation.
And for the Pac-12, I mean, they were essentially trying to pay the LA Times like $100,000, lining up sponsors for favorable coverage. And it's weird when you look at you hammer the Pac-12 because, you know what, people are saying they're writing bad stories about us, doing negative things. Instead of fixing what we do, how do we get good stories written about us? Let's pay for that. Which you have one reporter at the LA Times who was going to get like exclusive access to, the brass at the Pac-12. They would get access to the coaches and the sports information people from the different universities. Like, that's basically what the Pac-12 was promising them. So you would give, because like Canzano's an insider, Wilner's an insider. They have these sources. They were essentially trying to take this younger LA Times reporter and make her an insider and an advocate for the Pac-12. And it was sort of like, do you ever, what was the great Netflix show about the presidential stuff, House of Cards, mm-hmm. where like he was having an affair. This is not an equivalent. I don't think everyone's having an affair, but you know, he was having an affair with one of the reporters and there was a quid pro quo, you know, like he would allow her to ask questions and give her information and stuff like that. And it, I mean, on a different scale, obviously, but they were, it seemed like they were trying to set something like that up. But even if that was working, and obviously it's not ethical, I just don't think if you had this one reporter saying things like Canzano reports that Larry Scott was gets like a $1 million pay raise and Wilner confirms it. And then the LA Times comes out with something that's contrary to that or tries to put it in a better light.
Oh.
You would start
it's
to
a,
like,
it's catch a beyond on to that, stupid yeah. plan.
Yeah.
Like it's like, so what? Stupid. And it's like this belief that media is actually controlling the narrative about your stupid league and the missteps you're making when it's not. Like it's just bad. And it apparently was some consultant they were working with who was just giving them horrendous advice on how to spend their money, which is true of like 99% of media consultants, but it, all very, very stupid. Like, I don't want that to be lost in it, but that's true of a lot of corruption. It's stupid. It's generally from bad impulses. And I'm sure somebody lined their pockets really well from this. But yeah, I mean, it's just a bad look for everyone involved. Pac-12 for doing it. LA Times for agreeing to it, everyone for how stupid it is, just awful.
Yeah. And I think, like you said, I don't think it got that far. Like things were signed, like there was agreed to, which is the problem. But then people started to kind of get wind of this and it was like, yeah, this is not going to work. So at least they, you know, stopped it, but not a good look for the LA Times again.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, why don't we take a quick break and we'll come back and get to your questions.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS. Here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Finally, not Linda got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday, starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, we're back here on the podcast of champions. Man, we went over an hour just talking about the newsy stuff. That was like all football-y, Dave.
It was sort of.
Well, there's COVID-y, but football-y.
I think we're going to piss some people off. I think that first hour going to have some pissed off listeners.
Really?
I think so. I'm hopeful that we do. We'll see.
Just from the, we talked too much football? We didn't get to.
I think we talked too much football adjacent stuff that I think it's a small subset of our listenership at this point, but it is still a subset that they really don't want to hear the football adjacent stuff.
Yeah, I guess so. But I mean, when you talk about the football schedule and
I think there's a contingent of our listenership who would much rather listen to like US president hot talk than the football adjacent stuff, because it's like, oh, this is too real, but it's not actually fun.
Gotcha. Well, you know I mean, we want to try to be newsy too. We're not all
No. I think we should continue doing it. I'm just saying.
Right. We don't have games, but these are things that could lead to or stop games. Like the movement, the threat is to opt out of football. Like, well, okay, if they opt out of football, we don't have a football season to talk about. I mean, I think that's legit stuff to talk about. You know, Nick Rolovich, could he be fired? Like, who knows? I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff that are going on.
I have a lot of doubts that he could be fired because he didn't say anything that. The thing is, if you read the transcript, and even if you listen to the audio, you can read what he's saying a more charitable way. I'm not willing to do it because I'm not willing to concede my intellectual faculties to believe he wasn't making an implied threat, but he could claim that he was going for the mentorship type thing. He was trying to explain to him that there are unforeseen consequences of what you're saying that you might not be seeing right now, and however inarticulately, that's how he expressed himself. But he had the best interests of Cassidy in mind, blah, 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 blah. but you could explain it away based off the transcript and even the audio. Like, it wasn't, he wasn't saying, well, buddy, you're going to have to go fuck yourself. It was, there was, you know, a variety of different things he was saying that were kind of unclear. And he was kind of like, just like, yeah, and that's going to be a, you know, a different deal. Like, what does that even mean? You could parse that for decades and you wouldn't know what it means. So I don't think it was, I don't think that's going to be firing offense because it wasn't explicit. If he was explicitly saying, yeah, man, COVID, that's totally fine because I've been told so by the university. That's totally fine. And I'm going to abide by their policies. This other deal. No, I think that's complete horseshit. And you're going to have to get off the team now. And anybody with you is going to have to get off the team. That might actually lead to some real stuff, but that didn't really happen in the audio.
Yeah. Well, if they were mad that we talked about it for an hour and 10 minutes, they're probably mad that we took question time and talked about it a little bit more. But we'll move on because this is our favorite part.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death.
God, I love that drop. I think the first one is actually for you and Hithloday. So maybe I'll let you take this one. You start.
All right. This is from Andy. Mostly for Dave and Hithloday. Hello, all. Dave, just like you, I also went on a 3,000-mile road trip with my kids, 2 and 4, only our trip was voluntary and we went to Yellowstone to camp and hike for 4 days. We saw a grizzly cub, a few black bears, 3 moose, a badger chased down a coyote, countless elk, bison, pronghorns, and much more. Hiking around the Grand Canyon of the Yellowstone was one of the cooler hikes I've ever been on, and the list goes on. I'm curious how you can say Yellowstone was disappointing. I have also been to Yosemite, and I agree it is beautiful, but would rank Yellowstone, Glacier, and Zion higher. Obviously, this is a matter of opinion, and I'm not judging yours. Just curious what you saw that was so different from how I saw it. Now, sometimes do I make an opinion about something where I have a limited amount of knowledge? Yes. Andy, I'm ashamedly saying that that's true. I've been to Yellowstone for 2 nights. And when I was there, we did like the geyser thing and then went on like a short hike that was not over anything particularly scenic. It's a big ass park. I missed a lot. So it was disappointing to me subjectively, but it was more about my experience with it than the topography or geography or whatever. For Yosemite, I haven't been to Glacier. I'd love to go to Glacier. But between Yosemite and Zion, I pick Yosemite because there is more variety of what's going on there. I think there's more to it. Zion's really cool. It's just relatively small for a national park. And it's just, I don't love that look as much as I like the green wooded, you know, Eastern Sierras. So that's, again, it's subjective. It's based on like childhood memories of going in the Eastern Sierras and all that kind of stuff, as opposed to kind of the deserty, more plateau-y type mountains in Yosemite or in Zion. But yeah, all of these are really good. Anyone who hasn't done the national parks or anyone who doesn't know what national parks are, like Ryan, you should do these, all of them. Glacier, if you've ever even looked at pictures, which is all I've done, looks amazing, and everyone should go.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, I look at some of the different sites, and I think I've been, so
you've been to the one by Fresno, right?
The one by Fresno, which people love that. But the Smoky Mountains in like East Tennessee, I've been to some of that stuff over there. So that was kind of cool. I don't know if they were specifically part of like the national parks, but like I said, I hiked and camped in the Grand Canyon, you know, which is awesome. I want to go to Joshua Tree. I haven't been out.
Yeah, Joshua Tree is cool. I've only ever really driven through it, kind of, but it's cool.
But yeah, there's some cool stuff. That place by Fresno, you know, it's pretty good.
Yeah, the place by Fresno. There's a couple of pretty good places by Fresno, if you're talking about Sequoia, Kings Canyon, and Yosemite.
Cool.
All right. Now a question for Hithloday. Dave and Ryan, feel free to zone out while football is discussed on this podcast. I can't zone out. I'm reading this. Last show, you mentioned that Scott Huff was a poor developer. I'm curious how you came to that conclusion. So not knowing anything, I thought Hithloday was biased on that assessment. So now we're going to hear why. He has coached for 3 years and has had Trey Adams, Nick Harris, and Caleb McGarry during that time, all now on NFL rosters. While Trey Adams was hurt, Jared Hilbers filled in, Jackson Kirkland has started for 2 years, and is almost a lock to go to the NFL next year. Coleman Shelton, NFL, and Luke Wattenberg have rounded out his core of OL. None of those players were his recruits and all have been 2 to 3 year starters. My point is, he has appeared to have done well with what he was given, and we have yet to see what he can do with his own developed players. It has also been rumored that Huff has not been pleased with the unnecessary complexities that his position group was asked to do. As listeners of this podcast, we know that no one made gaining 5 yards look harder than the Huskies. As a person who studies film, do you think it is that Huff doesn't develop or that the Husky offense is overly complicated and makes their OL look bad? I feel it is the latter, and Huff deserves a free pass for now. Thanks all for your time. Big hugs, Andy. Thanks, Andy. I don't know the answers to any of those questions.
I don't either. So, Hithlade, we need you. Nice. But, yeah, good stuff on the national parks. Gatlinburg is where I went to in Tennessee, East Tennessee.
Yeah, Gatlinburg's pretty.
That was neat. It was sort of like...
Did you go to Dollywood? Isn't Dollywood over there?
I didn't go to Dollywood. So we'll have to check that out. All right. Thank you for that one. For email verification, this is funny from Paul. Last week, you two noticed a distinct pattern of frequency. I'm sorry, on frequency and timing of emails from Hithlade and Hugh Gaines. I apologize for the spelling. Yeah, he's butchered both those. You pointed out that they never email at the same time, which is obviously incriminating. To verify that the two are different, I propose that they should email at the same time, thus clearing their names.
The problem, great... Paul, the problem is that you can now schedule emails in Gmail.
Oh.
Yeah. No, the real solution is we have to have a Zoom again and have them both on, and they have to talk to each other.
I like it.
That's all. That's all we can do.
And we didn't get to see Hithlade's. We wanted to see them.
We wanted to see his visage, his visage.
Yeah,
his
very face. They saw my beard at the time.
Yeah. Oh, when are we going to do that Zoom? So we got one request to not do it on a weeknight, but we also got multiple requests to do it on various other days. I think we just have to pick.
Yeah. So there, if you want to read Mark, he's got his potential, yeah. And then we'll talk about it then, I guess. That's good. Yeah.
This is from Mark. Upcoming Zoom session. Hi, guys. Just wanted to give my 2 cents on a potential Zoom session 2.0. I'm not particular on the day as long as it's 7:30 p.m. or later. Looking forward to seeing Grizzly Adams and Littlefinger talking anything but Pac-12 football. Thanks and go Cougs. Mark in Vancouver, Washington. Bonus question. Over under 3.5 weeks until football seasons get canceled, get called off, delayed. If you've already answered this question, feel free to use the Washington State meow drop.
We haven't, but I'll do it.
Washington State Cougars.
All right, so 3.5 weeks. Where does that put us?
So from right now, that would be like after fall camp. So that would be
August 26th, August 27th, somewhere in that range?
In that range. So we'd have like 10 days of fall camp.
Okay. So at least one by then? All right, so at least one FBS league will have canceled by then. Yes.
I think I'm going to take the over.
Do you think it'll be longer than that?
I think a little longer. I think a week and a half of fall camp will get the... I think by then we'll be talking about it. But like if it's going to cancel... I mean, it could happen like freaking the first week of fall camp. But I'm going to say probably like week two. After week two of fall camp is when things just look like, yeah, this isn't going to happen.
Yeah.
So that would be my guess.
Okay, so we're both really optimistic about a season.
Yeah. What about the Zoom call? Like, when do we...
So this weekend is no good for me. I can do this week if it's not too tight of a turnaround, Wednesday or Thursday. In the evening, that's fine.
We'll probably have to do, like, next week, because it'll be a little tight.
Yeah, we'll have to do next week. Next week I can do basically any day. So it's really dependent on your schedule, my friend.
Okay, I think we might have more comments later on, but let's plan on next week, and we'll see if weekend works. But I got to read this one. It's Ryan is right, so ooh, I like Frank in Sacramento.
Okay, so Frank got hit on the head.
And I don't mean politically. He's right about, quote, some things are great about the pandemic, like no traffic. I don't think I was real. I mean, this is what I was saying, but like not, I'm not saying like the pandemic is good, but there's some positives. Look, that could
there's
come
upsides
out
to even big negatives.
Yes. I had occasion to make three round-trip car excursions from Sacramento to San Diego since June 1st. On the six passes through L.A. on these trips, I was in slow-and-go traffic for a short time twice, came to a stop on the freeway just once on I-5, and did not even slow down three times through Los Angeles. This portion of the same trip has been a three-plus-hour slog in years past. Frank in Sacramento. And I don't know if we talked about this before, Dave, but the Cannonball Run, they like set record times early on in the pandemic. It's the race from like New York to Redondo Beach, like just drive as fast as you can. And they have to average like over like 110 miles an hour. And they were able to do that and get out here and break the record early in the pandemic because traffic was so light. And my hiking excursions that are like a little further away from LA that I have to get up early and go drive on have been pretty easy to get out there. Even if you're going like 90 miles, it's only taking an hour and a half instead of 3 hours. So yeah, there's some benefits.
Yeah, totally. Some real benefits that should make us long for these things still being the case after the pandemic is over.
And sometimes it's things like that that open up, you know, opportunities where you weren't really going to, if a boss was going to say, you know, I think working from home is going to work, but I don't know. And well, I don't want to like get this started. Like you start
exactly
doing it.
Exactly right. Exactly yeah. right. Don't waste a crisis with any of this stuff, because now we know working from home works fine. As long as you don't have to watch your kids at the same time. That's crazy. We know school's important even more than before. We know
teachers
that's
are
really
important. Yes.
Yeah. Teachers are important as hell. Day drinking on the streets, way cool. Everyone should do it. And there shouldn't be cars around when you're doing it. That's definitely have more walkable areas with outdoor areas where you can do that.
Yeah.
Outdoor restaurants patios, should have way shopping. More patio service. Way yes. more. Because it's so much better. Everyone likes that. But like all these things, these are things we can do. We can collectively decide that this downtown isn't gonna have cars anymore and we're just gonna make it walkable. Sorry. Like, just do that. It's fine. We can do this. We can put our heads together and we can make this happen. Doesn't take that much work to make these things happen. Yeah. A lot of European cities decided to do this crap when the pandemic hit. We can do this. And it's way, way better to have walkable areas. We want those. We want walkable areas where you can get drunk. That is our motto here on the Podcast of Champions.
I don't know if we talked about this before, but this was, God, I think I was listening. I might have been listening to like a Freakonomics podcast, but you know, we both like some of the World War II stuff. And one of the things for Stalingrad, there was a siege. It was almost 3 years. It was like 900 days and people are eating like sawdust and stuff. I mean, obviously that's awful. Like one of the worst things that happened in our planet probably, right? Like it's just bad. But there was like some benefit that came out of that. There were people basically dying and they didn't know why. And it turns out it was all the people that the gluten stuff going on. I think it was celiac disease, I believe. And they weren't sure what was going on. People were dying and they didn't know what to do. They're eating the bread and they're eating a lot of gluten, and it was having a negative effect on their body and causing all these problems, and people were actually dying. Then the siege happens and it stops. Like basically people stopped eating bread. So this was this forced experiment that we're going to take away your bread. And then they stopped dying of the, I think it's celiac. Is that right? The gluten one. I'm sorry, but yeah. So this was like this forced, horrible experiment. And then they go back, and once the siege ends and everyone starts eating gluten again, then they start dying again. And they kind of used that to figure out like, we cut out bread and now they're not dying. And so it was like this way to kind of figure out by starving people, which, you know, obviously horrible. But that's how they kind of figured this out. I hope I got that correct, but that's from what I read or whatever on that podcast. And I read a bunch about the Stalingrad, the siege and everything. I think I have a whole book on it, but I don't remember seeing anything about that. But I think I got that from the Freakonomics podcast a while back. And I just thought that was like fascinating.
Very cool.
It's like this real world experiment that you would not.
Yeah.
Obviously, you would never say, you know what we should do? Let's take Los Angeles and not feed them for 3 years and see what, you know, see if that fixes the problem.
Right. No, let's take Los Angeles and hit them with a pandemic that's going to kill a bunch of them.
Right.
But upside, we've learned that there's some cool things that we can do as a society that would make living here a lot better.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good. Go.
The market correction stuff, like you talked about the cost of tuition, coaches' salaries. If football shuts down, athletic department shuts down, we might see a correction there where the pandemic actually sort of realigned things. Like, you know, tuition's just out of control, going up every year. And it's going up this year for a lot of schools, and they're not even going to have in-person classes. Maybe this is the correction for that. And you actually make the college experience better or more, you know, equitable. Like right now, I mean, you could make the debate, right, that it's not economically sound advice to go to college because you're going to be in so much debt. And maybe the pandemic brings the price of college tuition down. Who knows?
Maybe. We'll see.
I don't know. Sorry. Just got a little rant there.
No, that was great. I loved it. I loved every bit of it. All right. This is something from Chris in Seoul. It's really long.
Oh,
it starts with Latin.
It means, what do you think?
Quid vobis videtur.
Yeah. So what do you think?
Boys, my review of the 20 pod. If you speak in tongues, what good is it to us listeners except that you speak by revelation, by knowledge, by orthodoxy, or by guessing? Okay.
What's the 20 pod?
I think the 2020 podcast as it stands at this moment.
Oh, what we're doing. Okay, gotcha.
By revelation, by... I wonder what that's a reference to. Do I not know that one? Anyway, don't worry about it. Thank goodness this week there is genuine football news. Listening to Dave display terminal confirmation bias regarding his COVID opinion has been really challenging. Fortunately, most longtime listeners love Dave and forgive him. The remainder are sadists. Lots of learnings from Korea. It helps calibrate your risk tolerance when you have a big Rodman fan with nukes and 20-year-old electronic controls next door. Simple fact that the outbreak in Daegu was much worse than anything in the U.S. Okay, New York may have been worse given the renowned competence and collaboration of the state and city governments and the superb care one can expect when arriving at a random NYC hospital. Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, Chris. I'm fine at all times being accused of any sort of logical fallacy. Confirmation bias? Sure, why not? You can't then compare anything in the American situation to what went on in Korea, except if you are comparing it incredibly unfavorably to the United States. There have been like 300 total deaths in the entire country of South Korea. Like 300 total. I don't think the United States has had under 300 in the entire time that we've been paying attention to the pandemic. So no, it not only was worse in New York than Daegu, I hope I'm pronouncing that correct, it's been worse in about 50 different places than it was at any place in South Korea. So just let's not accuse confirmation bias while also doing the same thing yourself. Let's have a little intellectual honesty.
Yeah.
Trust me, a bit of collective discipline on mask wearing, hygiene, and actually observing self-quarantine when exposed will bring community spread to a negligible level. Social distance and plexiglass are red herrings meant to equal mask wearing. That's working in South Texas, right? I honestly do not know what in the hell he's talking about
here. I'm not sure either.
Okay. Six people positive this Sunday in a greater Seoul population of 25 million. Schools in session, sports back this week with some live spectators, even a few social justice protests, sans statue attacks, and burning and looting tonight. Marley nailed it years ago. David, trust the experience of 50 million people. The corona does not have to shut down life's normal activities and divide a country. Only a more dangerous organism can do that, Ebola and politicians. Politicians are especially malignant in an election season and often conceal themselves by hiding behind journalists. Unfortunately, we have them here in Korea, too, and masks are no protection. Okay, so it's just nonsense conspiracy theory crap. Okay, that's fine. I didn't realize I needed to discount literally everything you were saying until this point. But now,
well, he's saying like masks are good.
Masks are good,
but
that they are sufficient in and of themselves with hygiene and self-quarantine when exposed, as if you know at all times when you've been exposed to this disease that has been proven over and over again, almost certainly comes at least in part from asymptomatic people. So, okay, the United States is having about 60,000 cases a day on average over the last 7 days, and I think over the last like 3 weeks. It's obviously not being taken care of at the moment. a bit of collective discipline is either something we're lacking, or more likely, that in and of itself is not sufficient for figuring this thing out when you have systemic failures at every level of our government and society. So, no, I don't think it's as simple as hand-waving, yeah, if you just wear some masks and wash your hands, it's going to be fine. Well, no, Korea had a lot of built-in, like, you know, trust in its own government, a lot of built-in societal unity that we just don't have. We are a systemic failure in facing this at every level. Our individual attitudes about it, this very email, like these sorts of things are part of the problem. We don't act collectively in any way. And that's the true thing that you need to have to deal with something like this. That's a collective calamity, is you need collective action to respond to it. Not a bunch of people complaining about different ways of doing it. Yeah, maybe in Korea they didn't need a full nationwide lockdown, but I know they closed schools for a while. And they had to force some to remain open just because they had to manage, you know, the emergency workers' kids. But it's not as if they didn't do intervention measures at the beginning of the pandemic. They just got it under control earlier because they're a better functioning society than we are. That's it. That's all. Anyway, finally, yeah. Ryan, forget dead presidents. Just go read Hard Hat Riot by Kuhn. This is mandatory reading for anyone who is not old enough to remember the late 60s, early 70s. Those were the days when protest leaders had names, public faces, and charisma, albeit no social media accounts, and the man had a plan. What say you? David, just suspend the damn naysaying for a bit. Oh, so it's about these questions follow. The Big Ten continue.
Quick on that. So was he saying social distancing and plexiglass art the way to go, but mask wearing is the real thing? Was that what did you get out of that? I was a little
confused. He said those are red herrings. When so being like in a actuality, distraction or something. All of these measures are things that would help. Do you need to do all of them if you're all doing one or two of them? Probably not. It's the fact that we're not doing anything at a functional level right now. Like, yeah, some people are wearing masks. Some people are social distancing. Are some schools still trying to open in the midst of a pandemic that's, again, infecting 60,000 people a day that we know about? Yeah, some schools are still trying to open. Is that really stupid? Yeah. Oh, yeah, it sure is. We're doing things that are just abject failures over and over and over again. And you can't just say, oh, yeah, if you wear masks, it's going to be fine.
Gotcha. Okay. I was just I think he was trying, there was stuff trying to be funny and
I don't know what was being funny in here.
Okay.
But social distancing and plexiglass, those are fine. Those could be good. Installing plexiglass in front of teachers in school, if you're going to insist on having school, is probably good. But in and of itself, it is not sufficient for solving it. All of these things could be good. They could help. But you actually have to do a certain amount of them, and you have to have some level of buy-in on a lot of them. Okay. And it has to be across the country. It can't just be in a few locales. Otherwise, you're just playing whack-a-mole forever. Okay, gotcha. Yeah, we figured it out in California again. Oh, crap, it cropped back up in Indiana. Okay, bam, that one's done. You have to do something national, and we are incapable, or have been so far. We'll see if we get better. All right, 1A. The Big Ten continues their envy and emulation of the Ivy League. Do you think the Big Ten slow walks into a fall season cancellation purportedly in favor of having a spring season?
I don't know. I from what you were saying, it makes it sound like they're thinking about it because of some of the issues. Yeah, so I'll go.
I'm basically just quoting Wilner. So, yeah, if they're the most likely of the bunch, then I think they're going to be the first. But I think the whole thing's not going to happen. 1B, the Pac-12 manages the virus better than the Big 12, ACC, and SEC. Come December, the Pac-12 teams have each completed 8 or 9 or 10 games. The other conferences bungle the protocols and only get 5 to 6 games in. Do you think the Pac-12 still gets left out of the playoff?
Yes.
Well, if they each play 8 or 9 or 10 games, then there's more losses to go by.
Exactly. 6-0 Alabama gets in. And
Andrew's going to hate us for this, but sometimes they just count losses, baby. Yep. And if the Pac-12 winner has a 3-loss season, it's no good. You're done.
You don't need those eye charts, Andrew. Just the loss column. That's all you
exactly.
need.
Exactly. he's writing up a strong.
Yeah, very, very strong.
Two, the California schools end up constrained by state and local rules and do not play or even scrimmage in 2020. Don't you think the return to the Pac-8 is lovely?
I mean, I think if the California schools don't play, they're not going to play. But
yeah, I don't.
I think that's likely, though. I don't think it's likely that a Pac-8 happens.
No, no chance. Three, same scenario. Do you think some California players enter the transfer portal and petition for immediate eligibility?
Sure. Well, but it'd be Pac-12. No, no, I don't think so.
Again, I don't think so because I think thinking of this as just a California issue, I think is missing the point, which is, again, it's a nationwide pandemic.
Yeah.
And I think if the Pac-12 decides it's not playing football, I think in the short term, everyone's going to decide they're not playing football.
Right.
Four, sincerely and without sarcasm, heartened to hear Larry Scott recovered from the Rona. Do you think his plasma should be injected into the Pac-12 coaches to protect them? Just Clay Helton? I don't think Clay Helton needs it.
No, he's
He's got just immunity to everything.
He does. It's funny. We had a question on our USC podcast. They were talking about coaches' salaries and all this kind of stuff. And I went into like the little market rant. I'm like, we talk about Larry Scott. Like, you could knock his salary down to 500K and it's not like someone's going to hire him away. It's the same sort of thing. USC paid, you know, Clay Helton a fully guaranteed contract, extended him when there was no market for him. And so that's just, you have a great agent that's like, you know, advocating for you, and you just duped a brand new AD that didn't know what he was doing. So that's just a university being dumb about their resources and giving a guy that, you know, if it's someone, you know, they're going to hire Mel Tucker away when he goes 5-7, you probably can't prevent that, you know. But if you're protecting a guy that nobody wants to hire, that why are you protecting that person? That doesn't make much sense.
Yeah, totally. Okay, and then tongue not in cheek.
Oh.
Nationally, do you think any P5 coaches will opt out?
Opt out? No, I don't think coaches will at all.
Head coaches? No. Maybe an assistant somewhere?
Yeah, it could be an assistant.
Yeah, I think the head coaches are too mostly just insane. Some of them more than likely should. Like, some of them most likely do have health issues, but I think most of them are crazy people.
Yeah. Is that it? Is that all I got?
Yeah, praying we have a season. Yours as always, Chris from Seoul.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Chris.
We need a translator for some of that stuff.
Man, it's just, like, some people, like, they've got... And look, again, could I be prone to... confirmation bias myself? Yeah, totally. Totally. And that 100% happens. But, like, I don't know that I would sit around accusing other people of confirmation bias. Like, I wouldn't sit here and say, oh, you're just looking for, you know, positive news about this whole thing. Like, what kind of blinders do you have to have on in this conversation to be like, hey, yeah, you got confirmation bias. I'm the actual rational actor here. Because I'm going to compare it to a place where there have been 8,000 total cases over the entire thing. And that's actually a rational thing to say.
Yeah, I've had some people making these weird comparisons or telling me, like, comparing, like, you know, California to Wisconsin. And I'm like, there's twice as many people in LA County than there are in the state of Wisconsin. And they were like, oh, they're comparing it to Singapore, which is like, you know, 300th the square footage of Wisconsin. Like, they make all these comparisons. I'm like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, you can't compare some small, like, highly populated, dense country with a spread out state, you know, like,
well, and it's just like, it'd be one thing if you wanted to compare it at the very beginning of the thing and say, hey, Korea's doing this thing. They got it at the same time. Why can't the United States get on gear and do this thing? And okay, fine. We've just seen the last 5 months. We've seen the United States completely fail at handling this pandemic. How can you then just hand wave and say, yeah, you just got to wear masks. If you just wear masks, you'll be fine. It's not an individual responsibility thing at that point. There is whatever you want to point to. There's massive failure at every level. It's individual responsibility, sure. It's the way our brains work in this country with how we've been indoctrinated about individualism. Sure, it's that too. It's the way the federal government failed, sure. It's the way the state governments have failed, sure. It's all manner of things. But it's the fact that the country is so big is a part of it. But you can't just hand wave and say, oh yeah, but just... look, if 80% of you wore your masks all the time, you'd be fine. We're clearly not going to do that.
Right,
like, that's obviously not going to happen. So what's next? What's the next thing you do?
Yeah.
Because we're not doing that. We're not going to do that because we've got a broken country. Like, yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't, yeah, anyway. And it's somebody in, you know, in Seoul who's telling us this. So yeah, okay, you're taking the view from, you know, a country that's figured it out, and that's great. But this is a much different and much more dysfunctional country.
We have a text message, a series of text messages, still not signed, but they noted that they're the anonymous 714, so they at least acknowledge that they're not signing it. So that's good. It starts off on the most recent broadcast. Who asked? Oh, I'm sorry.
It was asked.
Was asked. Who plays Sean Miller in a movie? Several bad options were discussed, but the correct answer is obviously Nick Cage. Imagine a face-off quality performance of Nick on the sidelines as the ref tees him up again, or the smile as he hands a stuffed envelope to an aide and tells him, turn that kitten into a wildcat. And he has a nice picture of a really weird face Nicolas Cage is making in one of the movies. So that's from the anonymous 714.
That's totally fine. Love Nick Cage. That was not the most recent broadcast. I want to say that was like several months ago.
Okay.
So somebody's going back into the back catalogs there. And that's fine. I respect it. So I don't even remember who I said would play Sean Miller in a movie. Nick Cage, great. Doesn't look anything like him, but great. Love it. Yeah.
To be fair, if you discussed this yesterday on the broadcast, would you still remember or potentially remember?
Yeah, that's a great
point. I wouldn't, so I don't know.
That's a great point. I can say this. I definitively did not discuss it in last week's broadcast. So okay. It is definitely not in the most recent one. I think it's been at least a month.
Yeah. We're sort of like dogs where if you, like, you know, you leave the house.
My brain doesn't work anymore.
You don't know if the dog thinks you're gone for a month or an hour. It doesn't know.
I'm getting the long ones today. All right, here we go.
Oh, do you want me to do this one then?
No, it's fine. This is from Brad in Portland. A few emails in one. Hey, guys. Got a few quick questions for you. Each question was meant to be its own email over the past few months, but I ended up putting as much effort into them as Dave. They showed up, but without Orion, it took a bit longer for it to happen on its own. That is a long way of saying each question has its own subject line. First email, then. If it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, then it is definitely not a duck. I think that's what he's going for there.
I think he's trying that, yeah.
Yeah. So I hear all the time that college football has no governing body like the NFL, but every year I hear about the NCAA granting or denying appeals for additional years of eligibility for players, early playing time for transferring players, penalties handed out by the NCAA, and so on. Isn't the NCAA acting like a governing body? What am I missing? Yeah, but they don't really regulate the school so much. They have control over the unpaid labor to an extent, and they have rules for how they can transfer between different schools, but it's not like the commissioner of the baseball. Like, it's the commissioner of the baseball. What language am I speaking right now?
We are where are we at? We're at the hour and 45 minute mark. Yeah, we're gonna have to, like, we'll put this in high gear.
Yeah, we gotta move quicker. So it's not like MLB or a pro league. Like, it's not where the commissioner has basically all encompassing power to tell teams what to do and suspend and all that kind of stuff. The NCAA has to go through years and years of investigations to even figure out how to punish teams. Takes forever, requires essentially the consent of the governed to do a lot of it. So yeah, to an extent, but they're not really powerful. Except over the unpaid labor. They have some real power over the unpaid labor because, and only because, the Power Five schools consent to the agreement.
Yeah, it's like they have power over, like, all the individual athletic departments and how they run and how many scholarships and all that kind of stuff. But as far as, like, what they're going to do during the season and how they do a playoff and all that stuff, like, the NCAA is not involved in any of that.
Yeah. All right. Paying some players. I know that paying players is always a hot topic with college football. Let's say the door was open for universities to pay football players. Wouldn't there be a move to do the same for the other revenue-generating sports like men's basketball? How many colleges do you think have the sports budget to afford that and running all the other non-revenue-generating sports? Also, since revenue-generating sports are usually sports played by men, wouldn't there be an issue with Title IX if only male athletes were being paid? We talked about this a little bit before. I don't know about the Title IX. I think you could make, from what I understand, just reading the opinions of people on different sides of it, you could make an argument either way. But as for the other bits of it, again, you don't have to pay all the money they're doing for the things they're doing now. You don't have to have a new $150 million football facility every 10 or 15 years. You don't. You do not need that. That's bad. You don't need to spend, like, whatever Chip Kelly is spending on training table every year, like $4 million. That's crazy. You don't need to do that. These things are expenses that they can make because they're not paying the players. They can pay the players. They can pay men's basketball players, too. There's only like 13 of them. it's just a question of restructuring the entire sport, which is what it would require, which I think is good and should happen, but it's just that's going to take time. Or something catastrophic, like the players deciding, okay, well, we're just not playing until you figure it out.
Yeah. There's definitely a lot of complexities. And if it's, that's one of the issues, if you're going to say it's going to be more of a free market, then only the revenue sports would get paid. Then there's going to be issues there. If not, then, you know, if you say, okay, we're going to pull all the money that the sports generate in an athletic department and divide it up evenly between all of the athletes, then you're going to have football players complaining like, we bring in all this money and the water polo people are getting paid. And why don't I get more? And
there's a fair middle ground. I mean, you don't have to say, oh, we're going, oh, you're paying now. Okay. We're going full free market and cutting everything. Like there is a middle ground you can agree to. That's fair. Look, a lot of these universities like having the other sports. I know UCLA for one definitely does. Stanford for a long time did. They like having all those other sports. Those are important to the university. They're important to a lot of prominent alumni. I don't think a situation where you're suddenly paying the football players and basketball players precludes you from having Olympic sports and even keeping those as relatively unpaid labor. Now, can you do that where you're paying them through the university? We'll see. Again, there's arguments on either side of it. I think you could challenge Title IX from that respect and say it would be grossly unfair to dole out this money that's being earned by these players to these areas that are not earning that money. I think you could make that argument. Now, whether they can profit off of their name, image, and likeness is, I think, the true thing that might be figured out in the next year here. And obviously they should be able to. And obviously that shouldn't impact anything to do with the Olympic sports.
Yeah.
But with money coming from the university itself, I think it should be figured out in favor of the teams that are earning money for the university. I mean, they should get some profit cut from the TV contract that has nothing to do with all these other sports and everything to do with football and basketball. I mean, it's the simple economics of it. And I think that can be argued. Like, I don't think it's just a foregone conclusion. Well, we might get challenged on Title IX grounds, so of course we can't even try to do this. I think that's a crazy thing to do. And it's just a way for them to say, we don't want to do this. Yeah. I think you have to investigate it. You have to figure it out. And you have to present a good argument. I mean, maybe it will get challenged on those grounds. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but I think you would have a fair argument that no, they shouldn't be entitled to this money that is being earned by these 85 guys and these 13 guys. And if you can make an argument that women's basketball makes money at some of these institutions as well, great, they should get money too. And if you can make an argument that it's valuable to boosters to pay for the name, image, and likeness of a water polo player, then great, they should get money too. But I don't think it necessarily means that because you're deciding to pay football and basketball players that you have to then cut all these other sports.
Yeah.
They just need to manage their money better, because if they created a situation where they can't pay their labor, they've created a situation that should be illegal. It's not, should be.
Yeah. All right. What else have we got for them?
We've got, how desperate for college football are we? The other week, one of the questions you got was about simulating the college football season and other things using some dark web website. Like, Ryan, I didn't check it out. If you do want to simulate the season, there is some software out there that you can use to enter all of the player data and coaching tendencies, and it can simulate each game. Right now, it goes for about $150 on eBay, but you are in luck, and I let you borrow mine for free. You will only need some older hardware to run it, something called an Xbox 360. Yes, I'm talking about NCAA 14. The software won't allow you to simulate which mascot would win in a fight or any of the other random crap that the website would, but the results would be the same, something to talk about and totally useless. So if you are that hard up for college football, on your next Zoom call, we can have a simulated game going in the background. We can watch the game, and like real sports, there will be computer-generated crowd. Thanks for all you guys do. Keep up the good work, Brad in Portland. Love it. We should have a simulated NCAA 14 season.
Thanks, Brad. I do like that, too. Because people can download the updated rosters and everything, right? And then you can like have an actual season for this for 2020.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they can do all that stuff.
Yeah.
All right, Eric, COVID and college athletes. Hi, Ryan and Dave. I recently read a Washington Post article about a meeting between SEC officials and players about COVID. He links to it. The article recounted that an SEC official told a player, quote, that class sizes would be smaller so students can sit 6 feet apart from one another, and that face coverings should help keep students safe. But he admitted The arrangement was, quote, not fair to athletes who might take every precaution but still be infected by the students who don't. I'm surprised, given the monetary stakes for schools, that schools aren't doing more to put a bubble around the teams. It would seem like most classes could be recorded, and there could be small classes and recitation and lab sections of larger classes just for in-season athletes. Do you know if the Pac-12 schools that are planning on having students back on campus are taking stronger methods to isolate their players from the rest of the student body during COVID? And as far as that is concerned, do you know how many Pac-12 schools are having full student attendance this fall? We need some more periods in there. Do you think that there are measures that would work to reduce the likelihood of a college football COVID outbreak? Are those measures politically feasible, or do you think too many people who matter would be angry about separating athletes from other students? Thanks for the podcast, and I'm glad you guys are staying healthy, from Eric.
Thanks, Eric. I think the only thing that's proven to kind of work so far is the bubble, and I don't think that's feasible, but that's the only thing that I can think of. I think any situation where they're like going to in-person physical classes is fraught with danger. The only way sports are going to work right now, or really anything, is going to be bubbling it up. And I don't think that's feasible at the college level for all the reasons that are implied here. You're creating inequities with how real students are doing it. Tracy brought this up on the broadcast that we did last week, and I thought it was an interesting take. It was for college basketball doing a bubble, and just having especially if all the schools are going remote, just having them work out of a hotel, and they just stay at the hotel, and then they go play, and then they go back to the hotel, and it's just the bubble of the teams. And it's interesting, and it seems workable on its surface, but again, you're talking about, I know it's my favorite phrase of the show, but you're talking about unpaid labor. So you're essentially saying to them, you have to be on house arrest in this hotel room so that you can go then perform a sport for us, making money for us. And then you're going to go back and do your schoolwork in this hotel room that we've allotted for you. That is less freedom than any people have, even in a lockdown situation that we had in California, where you could then go for a walk outside. You could take your dog for a walk. You could even go to the grocery store. None of these guys would be able to do that. That does not seem workable at any level for me.
Right. No, I agree with you there. And the bubble seems to work. The NBA seems to be doing fine.
But you're paying them.
Right. But you can't do a bubble in college. We might get a smallish simulation of a bubble by athletes and some other performing arts students or whoever being on campus, but the regular student body not. So you don't have the same kind of exposure. It's not a bubble, but it might be the best thing to happen. Where before we said, if students aren't on campus, how can you have sports? But if you have a very limited number of students on campus and everything else is online, that might be the best thing for the student athletes, because there'll be less people they can catch it from.
Yeah, absolutely. But good question. All right. This is from another one from Brad. Okay. This is Brad in Portland. I missed one. Sorry I missed an email, but thought it was too good not to send. Ryan, next time you were at a Utah home game. Last week, you guys were talking about national parks, and Ryan commented that he'd never been to Zion National Park, but really wanted to go. For your listeners who are not familiar, Zion National Park is located in the middle of the state and slightly above the Arizona border. Ryan, I remember you saying you made it out to Rice Eccles for a game a few years ago, and I'm really surprised that you did not take the time to check out Zion National Park then. I mean, a simple look at the Pac-12 football divisions map shows Utah's campus is clearly in the middle of the state and slightly above the Arizona border. Next time you should take a few minutes to drive south and see the outdoors. So it's a photo of Larry Scott with a graphic about the Pac-10 when they were adding Colorado and Utah. And a lot of these are not perfect, but Utah's is particularly egregious with the emblem for Utah being essentially what would have been like an hour north of where Zion is.
Right.
Yeah.
Where it's up really near the corner.
Yes. Yeah. And Denver's off too. Like Denver should be a little bit further north.
Boulder.
Boulder. Yeah. My bad.
But yeah, they have Colorado down near the southern border as well of New Mexico.
It's got USC where it should be, which is somewhere like, I don't know,
San Diego
near Blythe, maybe.
but there's two schools in one city, so that makes a little more sense, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But Utah's way too far. Both Utah and Colorado are way too far south in there.
Totally. All right. And then in hindsight, I think it's just another sign showing off how things would be with Champagne Larry as conference commissioner. Yeah. You are right, Brad. Thank you for your emails.
Great stuff, Brad, and great stuff from everyone. That was a good long show, Dave.
It was a long show.
Almost
we'll,
2 hours.
Well, I guess we'll learn if it was a good one. But it was a long one. Definitely.
I think there was a lot of information. I think hopefully
we said a lot of words. A lot of words were shared between us with the listeners on this show, and we'll see how they are how they are received.
Yes. Is it just a random assembly of words put together from
At times it felt like that. At times it felt like it was just figuring it out, building the plane as it was in flight, you know. That's sometimes the way I feel in the middle of a sentence. So we'll see how it goes.
If you took 1,000 monkeys and put them in front of 1,000 microphones, and
exactly
one of them would be this podcast.
One of them would master human speech.
Which we have not. All right. Well, let's wrap it up. That's David Woods. I'm Ryan Abraham. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Podcast of Champions. Thanks to everyone for listening. All the questions, we appreciate it. And let's keep our fingers crossed. Maybe we'll get some college football. We'll keep you updated on the news of what's going on. Thanks for tuning in, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye!
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.